session number 22083, Real One.
This is the first reel of a taped interview with Bill Mitchell in his home in Perth, Western Australia, on the 28th of the 6th, 2001, for the Imperial War Museum in London, and the interviewer is John Bannister. Bill, I thought we should begin the interview by you telling us your full name and where and when you were born, please.
William Richard Mitchell. Born in Balder, Western Australia, on the 24th of February, 1917.
Tell us about your family history and how you came to be in Balder.
Well, my mother and her father came over from New South Wales around about the turn of the century. And my father came from Victoria about the same time. And my grandfather, he was an engine driver on the mines. And my father originally was a water carter, like with water tanks, because there was no pipeline there for a start. And
tell us where Balder is. It's a, as far as I understand, a mining area.
Yeah, Balder is about 600 kilometres east of Perth. I don't know how far it would be from Esperance. It would be about 400 kilometres, I suppose.
At the time, as you were growing up in Balder, what was the main industry there?
Oh, mining, without a doubt. That's about all there was there. There was a few stations way out from Balder where they ran sheep and a few cattle, but not many cattle.
Can you describe the country to us?
Well, generally it's pretty flat, but there's a lot more timber than it's supposed to be a desert. But there's a lot more timber around Balder and Kalgoorlie than a lot of people think. And that was the main source of power in the early days. They had railway lines running out through the bush. very narrow gauge lines, and the woodcutters used to go out and cut the wood and run it into almost every mine had it. Well, every mine did have its own wood burning boiler, and I know the Kalgoorlie power station, which was actually sited in Balder, they used to burn 10 tonnes an hour every day, 7 days a week, 10 tonnes an hour. And that was all cut. And then all the other individual mines had to get their own wood and produce their own steam to drive the winders for the mines, where they let the cages down and brought the ore up and all that sort of business.
Tell us about your father's occupation. What did he do?
Well, he finished up in the mines. He was I can't remember him when he was carting water, but it was before I was born, and from then on he worked in the mines, mostly on the surface, but he still died of miner's phthisis at the age of 74. at different times he was a tributer, which is they'd sort of lease a piece of land from the mining company and work it, and whatever gold they got, they kept it, sort of thing. I suppose the company would have got something out of it, because it would have to go through their treatment plants. That's about all. At one stage, he was off work for 6 months, and there was nine of us. There was nine kids, and there was no social security in those days, and we had a pretty rough time of it. It was only the fact that my grandfather was there, and he was blind, and he was on a blind pension. And that's how we survived. But
when would that have been?
Well, I can just remember the horse-drawn ambulance coming to the place and picking him up. That would have been about 1922, I think, that he got sick. But from then on, I don't think he was ever out of work. Once he recovered, I don't think he was ever out of work. But of course, the wages weren't very high. And
so we're talking before the Depression?
Yeah. That was the early 20s. And even through the Depression, he was never out of work, or not for very long.
But, so, growing up in Boulder, what was that like?
Well, I thought it was the best place on earth until I got away from it. But it was pretty hot. There was no air conditioning. I mean, never had refrigerators. All we had was the old Coolgardie safe, which was a canvas box sort of thing with a water tray on top, and the water used to run down over the canvas sides. And the wind would blow through and cool things down. That's all we had.
Can you describe your house to us?
Well, it was a corrugated iron. It had originally it had a bullnose veranda on it. I don't know whether you know what a bullnose veranda is. It's instead of coming down straight like that, it come down and curved. They're coming back again now, and that got blown away in the 1928 cyclone, and we never saw it again. So, we used to, all the kids used to get out and collect up bags, bones and bottles and sell them, you know, like to help out along the road. And in the late 20s, early 30s, I used to sell flowers on a Saturday. The lady at the back of us grew them and parcelled them up, and I would take them to Boulder and go around the shops and the hotels and that, mostly violets, and we used to sell them for a shilling a hundred, and for every hundred that we sold, we got 3 pence for that. And my brother, he used to go to Kalgoorlie. He was 2 years younger than me, and he'd take a basket full of violets into Kalgoorlie and sell them in there.
What of your mother? You haven't spoken of your mother. Well, about her.
Yeah, well, Mum, as I said, she came from New South Wales. She was born at a small place called Tumbaroora in New South Wales, which is just out of Hill End, about 3 miles out of Hill End. I went there on one of my trips around Australia, and there's nothing there but a graveyard now. And she came over with her father and two sisters, and of course she married Dad there. And
can you name your parents?
Yeah. My father's name was William Arthur Mitchell, and his father came from Cornwall, And the mother's name was Pearl Agnes Coral May Lawson. That was her original name. And as I say, she was born at Tumbaroora.
Where did you come in the family line?
Well, I had three sisters, older than myself, and I was the fourth. The eldest of five boys. There was Bill, Barney, Artie, Rolly, and Jack. And they're all alive bar one. He got killed up at Parkston just after the war. We all had our turn at selling things, you know, like flowers and all that sort of thing to bring in a few bob.
Tell us about growing up in Boulder, things like going to school.
Well, we used to live approximately a mile from the Boulder Central School, and we walked there every day, and sometimes we'd come home for lunch, and then run back again. It was pretty good, really. It wasn't a bad place to grow up for the kids, because they could run wild, you know. For instance, we used to play certain games in the playground at Boulder, and they used to call it relievo. I don't know whether you've ever heard of it, but we used to finish up in the mines, which was about a mile away, and sometimes we'd get back 1:30, 2:30 back into the classroom, because we were always in trouble when we did that. But that was one of the games we played, and then there was high cockalorum. You've never heard of that either. The only reference I've seen to that is in a book called The Mango Tree. It's all about Queensland, and they mention high cockalorum there. That's the only time I've ever heard it outside of Boulder.
Describe it to us briefly.
Well, high cockalorum, you used to get against a fence or a post, the anchor man would get behind stand up with his back to the post or the fence, and then the rest of the team would put their heads down into, the first one to put his head down into his stomach, and the next bloke would put his head between the legs of the next one until, well, they stretched from here to the other end of the room, about 8 or 9 kids. And then the idea was that you had to run and sort of jump over them until you got and get as far up as you could. And then each time every kid jumped, they'd say, "Hi, cockalorum, jig, jig, jig." Ever said a monkey riding on a pig? And that would keep going until the blokes that were holding them up collapsed. And if you you had to, if you were on the receiving end, you had to try and stay longer than the other team. And it was that was one of the games we used to play then.
At school, what were you taught?
Or just the normal, up till, they used to break us up into three sections. There was the infant school, the intermediate, and then there was the senior school. We started at 6, I think it was, the year you turned 6. And you'd go until you were about 8 in the infants, and then from there you go into the intermediate, from 8 till 10, and from 10 to 13, you'd go up into the higher grade. And in those days, you had to either win a scholarship to go on to high school, what they call high school, or if you didn't want to go to high school, you used to go to technical college, and they'd teach you metalwork and woodwork, like carpentry and all that sort of thing. But they also taught that at, in the last 2 years at the Boulder Central.
Were you taught history at school?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we knew more about England than we knew about Australia, actually. We used to, every morning, we'd have to stand up and salute the flag sort of thing and sing God Save the Queen or the King. It was the King at that time, King George V.
How did you feel about that?
Oh, well, it was just part of the course, so nobody worried about it. Whenever we were asked what nationality we were, we'd say British. There's no Australian, we'd just say British. And that's all there was to it.
Was there talk of the First World War at all, as a young boy that you can recall?
Well, I had two uncles killed in the First World War, but I never ever knew them because they stayed in New South Wales with their mother. I don't know what the reason was. There was a bust up in the family somewhere, and they stayed over there. There was three boys, Arnold, Walter, no, there was four boys, and two of them got killed in France, and the other one, Uncle Walter, that came back, he was eventually got killed in the mines in Broken Hill. And Ken, he was the youngest. He lived in Sydney.
What of your knowledge of the First World War from other people that you knew in Boulder, for instance? Did they talk about it at all? Did your father have any?
No, Dad. He never ever went. He was rejected for some reason or other. He told me he tried to get in, but he was rejected. Of course, he was only about 5 foot and about 6 stone, so he wouldn't have been able to stand up to that. Although there was a lot of small blokes in the army.
What was the sense of patriotism in regard to the First World War that you experienced growing up in Boulder?
Well, we used to line up every Anzac Day and go to a parade, and we were taught about the First World War at school. As far as I can remember, of course, there's a war memorial in almost every town, and there was one in Boulder and one in Kalgoorlie.
What were you taught at school about the First World War?
Well, I can't remember now.
When you went to the Anzac Day marches and things, what was the feeling?
Oh, no, I can't really remember. What
do you recall the sights of those occasions? What would happen?
Oh, there'd be a parade down Burt Street, and they'd all finish up at the railway reserve up the top end of Burt Street, and they'd have a service there and sing their hymns and finish up with God Save the King and all that sort of business.
In what way did you and the other boys in the town look up to those soldiers?
Oh, we thought they were the greatest. Some of them, they used to go into the parade with their the old uniforms. They kept them for years and years and used to wear them all the time.
To what degree was there a sense of pride that those chaps had, do you think?
Oh, I think there was a great sense of pride. They were all very proud of what they did.
Did you ever think that you might become a soldier one day?
Well, not until around about 1936. I was just old enough to miss out on national training. They abolished national training just before I would have been due to go in. So would have been about 1928, I suppose, around about then. I'm not too sure about the date. But I know some of our neighbours, the elder boys, they went into camp and did their national service. You know, I can remember it well because they used to dress them in corduroy trousers and they were too rough for them, so they gave them to us and we used to wear them.
What was the feeling of going off to be a national service, or to be involved in the national service?
Well, I never ever did it, but they reintroduced it in 1939, I think it was, it came in.
For those boys that you knew who went into to the national service, how did they feel about it, do you know?
Well, the only ones that I came in contact with, they weren't too happy with it.
Why?
I don't know why. I think perhaps the Depression had a lot to do with it, because they couldn't get jobs. And I can distinctly remember one of the neighbours saying, well, they can stick their army, because if they can't give me a job, why should I go and fight for them? So,
what were you doing at the time? You mentioned 1936. What were you doing in 1936?
1936. Oh, I'd already started work on the mines then. I started work in the mines in 1935. And I worked there for 5.5 years.
But these are gold mining?
Gold mines, yeah. But fortunately, I never ever got down very deep. About 500 feet was the deepest I got.
Had you always thought of being a miner?
Not particularly. At one stage I had great ambitions of being a journalist, but things didn't work out that right. I was a bit chary about school, and because I never went on with my education the way I should have done.
How old were you when you left school?
14. And I left school on the Tuesday, and I caught the train down to this place called Colgar, and I worked on a farm that was in October, and in January the next year I got peritonitis. I was out on the farm, and I started to feel sick on the Monday. And it wasn't until the Thursday I got to hospital, which was at Mirren, and by then my appendix had burst. And in those days, about 99 out of 100 used to die if their appendix burst. It was around about the time that sulfanilamide came in, and that's all that saved me.
You mentioned another time that your life had been in danger. as a young man? You went swimming.
Yeah, well, I was only nine then, and I was nearly drowned then. And then again, when I was I think I was 19. We went out to a dam, to a lake that had got filled up just out of Currawang, which is about 12 mile east of west of Kalgoorlie, and we used to go swimming there. And there was a sand spit about a mile out into the lake, and so this young lady and I, she was only a kid, she said, come on, we'll go out to that sand spit. So we started off to go out to the sand pit, spit, and she got halfway and she said, I'm going back. So and I thought, well, I'm going out, and I kept on going, and instead of having the spell, I turned around and came straight back. And by the time I got halfway back, I was puffing and blowing like a broken winded horse, and I eventually got along by going down, kicking my toe on the bottom, and making to the shore. If I'd have realised, I could have gone another couple of yards to my left and walked in. But,
growing up in the country, did it make you a tough character, do you think?
Oh, I think it definitely has got something to do with you growing up, because we used to we had a horse and cart, and we used to go out and get a load of wood, just the kids on their own. I remember once we at the time they used to keep kids home if anybody in the family had measles or mumps. All the family had to stay away from school. And on this particular day, there was, there must have been seven or eight kids. And we decided we'd go out and get a load of wood for us. And we used to go out round about Parkston, which is out from Kalgoorlie. And of course, they were only crow's nests, actually. There was not too much good wood amongst them. And when we got back, I decided that the old horse had had enough, so we went down and caught a horse that was running loose down on the flats, and put him in the car, and turned out that he was an ex-trotter, and I was spelling him. And we put him in the car, and away we went. And he started to play up a bit. Instead of going forwards, he was going backwards, and all the other kids jumped out. It was our horse and our cart and harness, so I had to stay with him. And away we went, and eventually the horse settled down, we collected all the kids, and we went out and got a load of wood and brought him back. And when he came back, he was snow white with sweat. because we had to get home before Dad got home from work, you see, otherwise we'd have been in trouble. And actually, we did get into trouble, because we just got him out of the cart and letting him go when Dad walked in, and we got paddywhack because we'd caught this horse that belonged to somebody else. But
you mentioned earlier that you were working in the mines in 1935.
Yeah, that's when I started.
Did you have any hopes for the future at that time that you can recall?
Not particularly.
Did you have any thoughts of other parts of the world?
No.
Interested in politics?
No. I never worried me.
So when was it that you started to hear about the deterioration of life, of conditions in Europe, and the possibility of the threat of a Second World War?
Well, it would have been about 1938, I suppose, when it really struck home that there was something not quite right. And I thought at the time, well, if war does come and they give me an aeroplane, I'll be a pilot. But I had no idea of being in the army. But eventually I woke up that my education wasn't good enough to become a pilot, so it wasn't until the fall of France that I actually had any idea of joining up.